The mode of his death, too, affects the mind differently in our day from what it did a century and a half ago. Matthew Maule, in a word, was executed for the crime of witchcraft. He was one of the martyrs to that terrible delusion which should teach us that the influential classes and those who take upon themselves to be leaders of the people are fully liable to all the passionate error that has ever characterized the maddest mob. Clergymen, judges, statesmen stood in the inner circle round about the gallows, loudest to applaud the work of blood, latest to confess themselves miserably deceived. Amid the disorder, it is not strange that a man of inconsiderable note, like Maule, should have trodden the martyr's path to the hill of execution almost unremarked in the throng of his fellow sufferers. But when the frenzy of that hideous epoch had subsided, it was remembered how loudly Colonel Pynchon had joined in the general cry to purge the land from witchcraft. Nor did it fail to be whispered that there was acrimony in the zeal with which he had sought the condemnation of Matthew Maule. It was well known that the victim had declared himself hunted to death for his spoil. At the moment of execution, while Colonel Pynchon sat on horseback grimly gazing at the scene, Maule had addressed him from the scaffold and uttered a prophecy of which history, as well as fireside tradition, has preserved the very words. "God," said the dying man, pointing his finger with a ghastly look at the countenance of his enemy, "God will give him blood to drink." After the reputed wizard's death, his humble homestead had fallen an easy spoil into Colonel Pynchon's grasp. When it was understood, however, that the colonel intended to erect a family mansion over the spot first covered by the log-built hut of Matthew Maule, there was much shaking of the head among the village gossips. They hinted that he was about to build his house over an unquiet grave. His home would include the home of the dead and buried wizard, and would thus afford the ghost of the latter a kind of privilege to haunt its new apartments, and the chambers into which future bridegrooms were to lead their brides, and where children of the Pynchon blood were to be born. The terror and ugliness of Maule's crime, and the wretchedness of his punishment, would darken the freshly plastered walls, and infect them early with the scent of an old and melancholy house. Why then, while so much of the soil around him was bestrewn with the virgin forest leaves, why should Colonel Pynchon prefer a site that had already been accursed? But the Puritan soldier and magistrate was not a man to be turned aside by dread of the wizard's ghost. Endowed with common sense, he followed out his original design. He dug his cellar and laid the deep foundations of his mansion on the square of earth whence Matthew Maule, 40 years before, had first swept away the fallen leaves. It was a curious, and some thought an ominous fact, that very soon after the workmen began their operations, the spring of water entirely lost its pristine quality. The water of Maule's Well, as it continued to be called, grew hard and brackish. The reader may deem it singular that the head carpenter of the new edifice was no other than the son of the very man from whose dead gripe the property had been wrested. Not improbably he was the best workman of his time, or perhaps the colonel thought it expedient to cast aside all animosity against the race of his fallen antagonist. At all events, Thomas Maule became the architect of the House of the Seven Gables, and performed his duty so faithfully that the timber framework fastened by his hands still holds together. Thus the great house was built. Familiar as it stands in the writer's recollection, in its rusty old age, it is therefore only the more difficult to imagine the bright novelty with which it first caught the sunshine. The impression of its actual state at this distance of 160 years darkens inevitably through the picture of its appearance on the morning when the Puritan magnate bade all the town to be his guests. A ceremony of consecration, festive as well as religious, was to be performed. Maule's Lane, or Pynchon Street, as it were now more decorous to call it, was thronged at the appointed hour, as with a congregation on its way to church. All, as they approached, looked upward at the imposing edifice, which was henceforth to assume its rank among the habitations of mankind. There it rose, a little withdrawn from the line of the street, but in pride, not modesty. Its whole visible exterior was ornamented with quaint figures, conceived in the grotesqueness of a Gothic fancy. On every side the seven gables pointed sharply towards the sky and presented the aspect of a whole sisterhood of edifices, breathing through the spiracles of one great chimney. Little spiral rods of iron beautified each of the seven peaks.